Hey, welcome back to the Infamous Podcast. This is episode 30, Don't Tug on Superman's Cannon. Thank you for that title.
No
that was
problem.
A good one. So it was a good collaboration there that we got there. But yeah.
Just remember an old Jim Croce song.
I know. So, we should link to that song in the show notes.
Yeah.
So, but
or play it at the end.
At the oh yeah maybe.
Yeah.
So all right. Hey, episode 30.
How do you feel?
Tired.
So you've done how many episodes now? 30 plus
39.
39. Okay. So, I was going to say I lost an interview somewhere.
But yeah. No, this has been fun. So, you know, this is our 30th episode. You know, go listen to last week's show. Like after you're done listening to this week's show, obviously. But go listen to last week's show. We had Freddie Morris from Night of Living Podcast and Horror Hound on the show. He was awesome. We had a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Hopefully he comes back soon
since
he lives so close. The week before that, we had David Griffin from Think Hero and Collider and Screen Rant on.
He can come back soon, too.
Yeah.
But he doesn't live that close.
No, but I figured out how to not do blabs.
Yeah.
And to do, so it'll be much better audio and everything to get, like, call-ins.
Right.
So that will be fun. You know, we've had a ton of great interviews. Brandon Montclair, Jacques Niebe, Susie and Miguel from About Seven, who we need to get one or both of them back on at some point here in the future.
And just talk about comic books?
Just to talk, not even like worry about their stuff. I mean, we can still plug their stuff. But yeah, the Man vs. Rock guys, which is probably the most irreverent podcast we've had yet.
Yeah.
So those guys are a trip. They were a lot of fun.
Cool.
All right. Let's get into this nonsense. All right. So if you listen on the regular, you know that we typically record on Thursdays.
Exactly.
Today is not one of those days.
That's why I might sound a little tired at the moment.
So today is Monday. So if you're listening to this, there's been a whole week of stuff that happened that we'll talk about next week.
Yeah.
But right now we're gonna review the Deadpool movie. For a special like Tuesday bonus show.
Yeah, we'll see that on Friday.
We can cover some stuff. Yeah, we're going to try and go see it Friday and then we'll review it right after.
There's enough stuff that happened between Thursday
and today. Oh my God,
there's
been just an explosion
that,
I
guess we exploded. I exploded and, you know, contained myself at the same time.
So normally the way Johnny and I's relationship like digitally works is he finds cool stuff and he posts it on my Facebook wall. All the time.
Yeah.
Like, I always have, like, three or four things under timeline review because Johnny's putting on my wall. This weekend was a little bit of a difference. I was just...
Yeah, I think the only thing I sent to you was the Zack Snyder.
You sent that, but, like,
you in a message because it set me off and I wasn't going to cuss on your Facebook page.
But then you put it on my Facebook page and that's probably the longest comment I've ever written back to anything without just picking up the phone and calling you. And so we're gonna close talking about Zack Snyder this week. We're gonna talk about Rob Liefeld a little bit. We're gonna talk about this really interesting article that we found on Bleeding Cool, just kind of about
comic book stores
in general. And really, like my question coming out of that is, who's the real customer for the comic book store, or better yet, for the comic book publishers, who's the real customer?
Right.
Which it was interesting, and Johnny and I have like. You know, like my dream is to own a comic book store at some point in my life. So it was really cool to read that. But we're going to kick off with a whole bunch of just geeky goodness here with we're going to talk about the Super Bowl 50 movie trailers.
Yeah.
So we just rewatched them all. Well, you saw them all.
I just watched them all for the first time.
You didn't watch the Super Bowl.
No.
So I did. But that's beside the point. All right. So. All in all, what was your overall impression of just the general tone of the content that we saw?
I think they were all good. I enjoyed what I seen. I mean, obviously, they only do not even a minute.
Yeah, like 44 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, as expensive as it is for a commercial on Super Bowl, don't know why, but, you know.
Well, because, what was it, 120 million people
watched. But most people that are watching the Super Bowl aren't watching the commercials per se because they know they can go online and watch them.
Well, now, so that's like an interesting thing. Like the quote unquote like highest rated commercial was one with Helen Mirren and Budweiser.
Okay.
Where it's just her in this real, like, nice-looking restaurant. She has a great-looking burger and fries and a Budweiser right in front of her.
Okay.
And it's all about, like, hey, if you drink and drive, you're an asshole.
Okay.
Like, I mean, that's, like, the you know, and it had, as of a couple hours ago, it had, like, 4.8 million views online.
Wow.
So, that was, like, the clear-cut, like, winner.
Do you think Budweiser told every employee to go watch that thing just to hype?
No. No, I mean, it was a really cool message, and like,
well, yeah,
you
yeah.
didn't know what was going to happen. Like, Budweiser had a big night because they had that, and then during the post game thing, Peyton Manning was, I'm going to go drink a lot of Budweiser beer, and yeah. you know, it's like, sure. you know, it's like, way to go, Budweiser, and yeah. you know, I hope they paid Peyton for that endorsement.
They probably did.
Yeah, it's like the new, I'm going to Disneyland. I'm going to go drink a Bud. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so no,
the fall of society.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, everything is like sponsored now.
Oh, right.
So yeah. like while I was waiting for you to come over this morning, I was watching ESPN, and it's like the Prudential Mutual Fund, blah, 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 Twitter feed brought to you by Geico. You know, it's like, what is going on here?
Well, when I got up this morning, I listened to music on my Amazon Kindle, and then I brushed my teeth with Colgate toothpaste, because that's the toothpaste I choose to use.
So this is the Infamous Podcast, brought to you by Lego and Voltron and Apple.
Hey, there you go. If we could get them all to sponsor us, that would be awesome.
Anyway, all right. So overall, like, we're going to talk about the previews. We're not just going to talk about the commercials, so don't worry. But there was one commercial, which I'll show you afterwards, the okay. Mountain Dew commercial, about the dog monkey baby.
I've seen pictures of that thing. Yeah,
I have not. I had a nightmare about that thing.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. Wow, so wow. It was creepy.
You're very impressionable.
I am. I'm an impressionable young lad. All right. So getting into it, we're going to talk about X-Men Apocalypse.
Yes.
We're going to talk Captain America: Civil War. TMNT: Out of the Shadows. Is that what it's called? Out of the Shadows.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. I wrote that down, and because it just said TMNT 2 on the. Universal YouTube page.
It's oh, like, wow.
Way to brand your stuff there. The Batman versus Superman Turkish Air commercials, which I thought Turkish Air was kind of like some new airline that was launching. Like, I didn't even put two and two together there. The Jason Bourne trilogy, which I'm a big fan of those movies, why that's included here, and I know you enjoy them as well.
Quadrilogy, yeah.
Yeah. The Independence Day Resurgence trailer. Coca-Cola did a really cool thing with Hulk versus Ant-Man, and then we'll close out talking about Deadpool, and that'll lead into the rest of the stuff. All right, so, wow, that got loud. X-Men versus Apocalypse, or X-Men Apocalypse, not X-Men versus Apocalypse.
Everything's kind of every movie is versus this year.
Versus.
Captain America versus Iron Man.
What did I say earlier? I said Deadpool versus Superman.
You're Deadpool. Like, someone did Deadpool. Like, is this really happening?
So, guys at Bat in the Sun, that is the next superhero beatdown we need.
Kryptonite swords, that's all. Yeah.
Let's jump on the pointy end. Okay. So X-Men Apocalypse, we get our first clear look at Psylocke.
Yeah.
Olivia Munn in action, jumping through something she's just cut in half. Pretty
cool.
It looks great. Like, she's, of all the characters, she's the one who actually has a
45-second preview, you got to see Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Scott uses eyes.
Uses power.
I mean, you know, that's what I'll call it, his eyes, because it is his eyes. You got to see more of Jean in outfit.
Yep. We saw Mystique in
Mystique
blue.
Back in blue and Apocalypse.
Really good shot of Apocalypse. Do you think they went back and reshot? Or do you think they just... Because that picture we saw of him
I think the problem that happened with that picture and with a lot of the... you know, stuff that was in that Entertainment Weekly issue, it wasn't to scale, first of all, because he is bigger.
Right.
Than...
Well, I was just talking about how he looked like Ivan Ooze in that picture.
Well, I think that was the whole thing. Somebody with Photoshop screwed up and highlighted the purple too much.
Okay. Because I was thinking maybe that
you
didn't
screw with colors.
I was thinking that's
lot.
Just kind of how he looked in that picture, because like his face is like looks different.
Well, right,
and like maybe you didn't see like
the dots
for like CGI and stuff like that. But
yeah, I mean, he does have the mouth. Like the lines on the mouth that, you know.
So I'm going to say this, like, X world that Matthew Vaughn has created. And yeah, I know Zack Snyder. Bryan Singer is the director and everything. But it's really more off of the first class.
Right, yeah.
World. Like, I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, it's cool, and I think it's cool, like you said, the Matthew Vaughn universe compared to the Bryan Singer universe acknowledges periods of time. You know, it's like, yeah, people get older and people are aging.
Yeah,
and that, you know, this is the '80s,
mm-hmm.
which you know was a turbulent time, anyways. Yeah, not just that the '60s and seventies weren't, but every movie has shown what was going on.
Right.
In that time, I mean, the '60s was a lot of.
Well, I mean, it was the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, in the '70s, it was the whole thing after Vietnam and
the whole xenophobic.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like, are these things out there or not when it came to mutants?
But, right. So I'll be curious to see what they acknowledge as part of the historical landscape.
So most of the characters have like just the leather jumpsuits on this time though.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how I feel about that. Like Psylocke has like a costume where they kind of went Power Girl with the cleavage. Well,
Psylocke's costume looks like hers except for the cleavage cut.
Yeah. Power Girl. Sorry, not Supergirl.
But it's like square cleavage.
But I mean, like, so, but it still looks like
Olivia Munn's assets. So,
she's beautiful. So, I did like the little sword video she did with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, that was cool.
That she posted on her Instagram. She's had a lot of fun with this. Like, she's like showed her training and things like that. Right. And, you know, she gets a lot of flack. You know, like, I think it comes from like Attack of the Show.
Yeah,
she's an actress, guys. She got cast on that show,
right? Yeah,
because I don't know. Did you watch Attack of the Show?
Oh yeah, yeah, I watched it.
So like they did when Sarah Lane left, and it was just Kevin Pereira.
Yeah,
they did like this like 3 week thing where they brought, or it was more than that, but they brought in like guests, like people who like kind of to like do
Allison
audition.
Hayslip,
Anthony Carboni.
Yeah,
And you know, and then Olivia Munn wasn't even one of those people, but the people who came in and did that. They didn't work out as the co-host,
right?
But they used all those people for things, yeah, and you know, and I think she just caught flack for that because, and maybe it wasn't her fault. It was more like the production of like, hey, she's a geek just like you guys. Well, yeah, she definitely has those tendencies, and she's super nerdy,
right?
But you know, I loved her in Newsroom. I liked her on that show, Perfect Couples. You know, so
right, but I mean, even before Attack of the Show, she was on a show called Out of the Blue or something like that, where she has a history of being a surfer, and the show was a surf show, So I mean, she was doing what she did, you know, what she was a professional at, and it's just one of those things where, like most professional sports people, she got old for her sport and she couldn't do it anymore.
Like most
professional sports people, they went into acting because it's almost the same thing.
It's you pretend to be something fun. But no, I think she's got the look down, you know, she's the right mix of Asian, and I'm curious to see if she's
Betsy Braddock.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the X-Men history, Betsy Braddock you know, took over that body because her body died.
Right.
So I'm curious to see if she is Betsy Braddock, if they mention Captain Britain.
Well, yeah, and she's like, she's pushing now for a Psylocke movie.
Well, yeah.
And it's I don't know about that yet. Let's see how the movie works
out.
Well,
it would be cool if they did that and tied it into the Captain Britain. Yeah.
So, it leaves me to wonder how big Fox wants to make this universe, because if you remember X-Men Last Stand, and you probably don't because why would you?
I do.
They tried to do too much too fast with throwing, you know, hundreds of mutants at the screen. So,
I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, obviously there's mutants from the previous movie in this, and you know, humans, because we did see Moira MacTaggert in the previous preview. So it's, you know, they're acknowledging the history of their movies, but it's just, you know, one of those things where are they doing a lot of this because of what Marvel's doing with their characters? And if you're going to do it, you know, and Disney on a whole is doing it with, you know, we're going to do Star Wars movies forever and we're going to do Marvel movies forever. Yep. And it's one of those things where if Fox wants to hold on to the X-Men, you know, that's the way to do it.
Yep.
But make sure you're not jamming stuff down people's throats.
Yeah. So, no. Okay. So Storm looks great.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember the actress's name, but she looks she's got the look. She looks fantastic. So, the kid playing Cyclops, you know, I mean, Cyclops is my favorite X-Men. Well, right. So,
I'm going to be super. Cyclops movie, obviously.
But I'm going to be super critical of him regarding.
I mean, if anything, if they do a fourth one and it takes place in the 90s,
yeah.
Then you're going to have Cyclops as an adult more. Right. So they'll probably acknowledge that character more.
Yep. So,
it'd be kind of cool if they did the 90s ones tying into what they did on the cartoon for Fox. Yeah. You know, that would be kind of cool.
Well, they could do the Dark Phoenix saga that
way. Oh, sure. Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, so yeah, I'm really interested to see this one. I've liked the last two. I liked First Class more than Days of Future Past, but
Days of Future Past would have been better if they would have done the road cut that they released.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, yeah. The road cut made a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
As to what happened in the story, because you know, Kitty Pryde having the power she had didn't really make as much sense.
Well, because in the comic it was the opposite. Kitty.
Well, Kitty was the one who ended in the patch, you know, yeah.
And which but, yeah, made the, more sense.
Well, and it was nice in the road cut to see Anna Paquin come back and actually play a little bit of a role. Okay. So.
All right. So yeah, it was a good one. I liked the trailer. The spot, I guess, not necessarily trailer.
Yeah, it's just a spot at that point.
Showed a lot of things we hadn't seen. Different footage than what we'd seen
right
before.
Yeah,
so all in all, I'm gonna call that a win. All right, so moving on to Captain America Civil War,
which was about the same amount of time, but
yeah, they
faster.
Were all about the same. I think so much more happened in the Captain America one,
yeah,
that was more like kind of intercut together, or better yet, continuation of what we saw in the first trailer.
So whose side are you on?
Well, I declared both of us as Team Cap on Twitter.
Yeah. Thanks for declaring me or something, man.
No, I'm definitely Team Cap.
You're not Team Spidey?
No.
Whose team do you think he'll be on?
He's going to be on Iron Man's team because he's impressionable and dumb.
And wearing that Iron Spider costume.
Is he wearing the Iron Spider?
I don't think so, but you know.
But, well, and I tweeted about it because they have new Twitter emoji. Like when you do hashtag Team Cap, it's Cap's face. And then hashtag Falcon, it's Falcon. And I mean, I'm Team Cap because A, Cap. B, I love Anthony Mackie as Falcon. I just love that character right now.
Right.
And then it's got my boy Paul Rudd as Ant-Man on Team Cap. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. We actually got to see him with the team.
Yeah, and I mean...
with the Avengers East Coast.
Yeah. But... yeah, so the teams broke out pretty weak. Like, I don't know. I don't think...
But the Captain America team has more strategy on it, like more strategic value.
Mm-hmm. Strategery, if you will.
Yeah, strategery. But the Iron Man team is more the powerhouses.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Vision. War Machine or whatever he's called.
He's War Machine again.
But no, they changed the name again.
Oh, did they?
Yeah,
oh.
I forget what it is. But War Machine, Black Widow... and Iron Man. I mean, and pretty much
Black Panther.
Yeah, well, we don't know anything. Yet, so. Well, he's got the whole country of Wakanda behind him. So.
He looks amazing.
Oh, he looks good. Yeah.
Like I was worried about how they were going to do that and not have it look like spandexy or it's overly armored like Batman where he can't turn his head.
Right.
They nailed that.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before about how they should hire cosplayers to help them design these costumes.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if that's what they did here, but it has a very functional like cosplay look to it.
Right.
Yet it looks almost exactly what you'd see in the comic, or if you play the Contest of Champions game on the mobile game, like he looks like that.
Okay.
So I love his eyes.
I just think that they continue. You know, Marvel continues to hire designers that can do a really good job. I mean, if anybody out there's got any of the art of the movie books that they've done. Yeah. I mean, the designs in those, you're like, oh yeah, I see where they came up with that or where they did this or did that. And it's like, yeah, they've got some awesome artists on their, on their like pre-production teams. And I mean, they've got awesome artists all the way through. Yep. I mean, you know,
no, they've, you know,
plus the Russo brothers. I mean, you know, the Russo brothers, I think get the Marvel universe a little bit more than like Joss Whedon did.
Yeah. I mean, I've been pretty outspoken the last few years about Joss and dissatisfaction is not the right word, disappointment,
distaste.
I guess. No, you know, But yeah, no, I'm so happy it's the Russos.
Well, right, and I'm looking forward to the fact that the Russos are doing the next Avengers, two movies.
Yep.
And they get it. You could tell from Winter Soldier that they get it, and that the writers are up to par.
Well,
and everything else, and the visuals.
It's not just getting it. They understand how to tell a story better than Joss Whedon.
Right, right. Like,
you know, Joss. I love Buffy. Loved Angel more than Buffy, and part of that's because David Greenwalt. But you know, it's one of those things where he's great at concepting.
Right.
That's why the first Avengers was so fun and good.
Right.
But when it's, you know, and it's a problem a lot of these guys have. Like, Geoff Johns has this problem. Brian Bendis to some point has this problem. Hickman has this problem where you get to a point in the story where, okay, now it's a logical time to start shutting it down.
Yeah.
And coming to, you know, and it doesn't have to be a clear-cut end, but coming to some form of resolution.
Right.
And they don't recognize that point in their storytelling.
Yeah.
And then they just end.
Yeah, it's just kind of the opposite of, like, you know, I mean, and obviously we were going to talk about it this week, but we'll talk about it next week. J.J. Abrams can close a story down.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally like a roller coaster where you're going up the hill and it's like, oh, this is going on, that's going on. You reach the top where it's like, uh-oh, what's going to happen? And then it's just the ride down and it's like, okay, cool, you know? I mean, he did it with Star Trek. He did it with Star Wars. I mean, and it's one of those things where...
Both Star Trek movies.
Yeah.
Honestly, like, we reviewed Into Darkness a couple weeks ago, and we're going to review Star Trek next week, but, you know, for the 50th anniversary, if you guys weren't aware, but...
Well, I hope they're aware by now.
Yeah, we've talked about it
enough. It's out there enough by now.
No, you're right. Like Khan had, I mean, it very much had its first, second, and third act.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of what Whedon does is a first and second act.
Right.
And then...
Well, that's because that's what Buffy, a lot of the Buffy series was first and second act. So, you know.
Well, and then when they did a third act, which was, in my opinion, the entire fifth season.
Yeah.
They went off and kept doing it, where it's, you know, I don't know.
That's where they fell into the trap.
Yeah.
So the next one is Turtles.
Turtles. TMNT 2, Out of the Shadows.
Did you like the first one?
Okay, so
I don't think we ever have talked about
it. We haven't. No. So the first time I watched it, I fell asleep. And it was like the middle of the day.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And you know me, I'm not a big fall asleep during movies guy. Right. Unless it's something that I put on like, late at night, like, to 2
a.m. in the morning or something.
And I mean, this was like middle of the day. So I was like, okay, I don't know what happened there. So I liked it because I've gone back and I've watched it.
Yeah.
But like, it gets that middle point of the movie and it loses me. Like when they're in the snow fortress.
Right.
It's like, just kill them. You know, it's just one of those things where, I like the interaction with the brothers. I'm not crazy about the design of the brothers.
Right.
Mainly because they have lips.
Yeah.
You know, you know, like, that bothered me about Ultron. It makes me hate the Transformer movies, you know, because they all have lips. You know, you know, it's like, they're not going to be making out. Like, they don't need, like, let them be.
You don't know who's going to make out with April O'Neil and who's not going to make out with April O'Neil.
Anyway. And the little like nose section of their face just kind of bothers me a little bit, like it
because you're used to seeing a design of the turtles where it's like there's not been nostrils
right
on the turtles, there's not been lips on the turtles. Every incarnation of the turtles has just pretty much been a turtle face, according to Eastman and Laird,
right? And I like, think you know, and that's my thing, and you know, and it's my thing
biologically. I don't know. Do turtles have lips?
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but like Ultron had lips, like. It made Ultron less scary.
That Ultron his mouth had James Spader playing the voice, and I'm like, that took me out of it too.
Well, and he was too sarcastic, but we've talked about that ad nauseum.
Yeah,
I will say this
looks good.
This looks fun.
Krang cool.
Looked awesome, and the little brain guy, the little brain Krang in there, like was cool. I like the voices of all four turtles.
Yeah, yeah.
I like the structure that they built with them and the interaction that they have, and it looks like we're gonna get more of that.
Well, right, and this looks like the movie actually is taking place a couple of years after the first one, so they're a little older.
Yep,
they look a little bit more muscular and built now. Obviously the CG looks a little better, I think, because of the fact that the last one did enough.
Yeah, it did well enough.
The budget for this one. Megan Fox still looks...
And I liked Megan Fox in the first
one. Yeah, she still looks good. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where...
Did you ever see Jennifer's body?
No, I've never seen that. Yeah, but
she's good in that, like in that campy like horror movie. Yeah, way. You would actually like.
She plays I compared to what she was in Transformers, she was a really good April O'Neil and played it really good because it was more the sarcastic kind of character you think she probably should play.
Right.
Like she's more of a sarcastic, like tongue in cheek type character. Mm. New Shredder.
Yeah.
I don't know if this guy is part of the Foot Clan.
Yeah,
that,
well,
you know,
I liked what you said when after you watched it. The real Shredder.
Yeah, real Shredder. Casey Jones.
Yeah.
Casey Jones.
Captain Amell.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
So, I think that's great casting. And that's good casting for him.
Well, and it's one of those things where
they'll
get people in, I think, because there's going to be Arrow fans that will go see this just for the fact that he's in it. And he is
such a
force of energy. That's it. He's a force of energy, pretty much, that he'll pull people in just because up until the day this movie comes out, he will be hyping it.
I mean, he live streams on Facebook constantly. Yeah. Like, you know, I mean, he is
very fan accessible and fan friendly.
Part of the reason I think Arrow is as successful, because he makes up like his fandom of just the fans, back at us, lets us like kind of forgive Arrow for some of its missteps.
Yeah,
probably more than we would if he were, one of these actors who, at the time,
even 5 years, 10 years difference in time has done a lot with the internet and with social media. If Tom Welling would have been very interactive with the fans online, like Amell is, do you think that would have like helped Smallville a little bit with? Because there are comparable storylines that go on in these two shows where it's like, you know, there are things where you're like, okay, it's a show. I can forgive this or I can forgive that. But, I mean, you know, on a whole,
Do you think Tom Welling's that kind of guy that would have ever done that, though?
I think that if he would have been able to do it, I think he would have picked up on it because it seems like now he's more active. As in speaking to...
It seems like he's more active just over the last, like, 6 months, though.
Yeah, I think he's understanding the fan base more.
I don't know. I don't know.
Somebody might have told him about it, too. Yeah. He might have had a conference with Amell, and...
Yeah.
Those are two guys I'd like to see in a room together talking.
To just play off each other, too. So, I don't know. So just kind of back to Turtles.
Yeah, sorry. We get on tangent here.
We saw the Technodrome.
The Technodrome, the Krang... I mean, it's obvious, I called that from the beginning. I said that it looks like the Krang are coming,
and then there's Bebop and Rocksteady.
Yeah,
and Rocksteady is actually played by Sheamus. He was from the WWE, and you get a real good look at Sheamus. And like, I know you don't watch wrestling, but so he has this like ridiculous mohawk, and then he's got like the beard that's like kind of braided around like where the mustache is. And anytime he comes out, the fans start chanting, "You look stupid." And that's all I can think every time I see him on the screen. So, and it's like, we've seen Rocksteady.
Right.
Like, Rocksteady looks cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm good with it.
I'm curious to see what this movie is. I mean, obviously, Out of the Shadows means that they're going to be...
Well, in the first trailer, you saw where they were talking to, I don't know if it was the press or if it was the police, where Raph is like, "We're just four brothers who love pizza and love this city."
I think it's whoever Laura Linney is, you know.
So, But yeah, no.
That is who that was, wasn't it?
Yeah. Was it Laura Linney?
Yeah, I think it was.
So, no, I'm excited for this. I really am. It's a turtle movie I'm looking forward to. I know the Kidbot didn't hate the first Turtles movie.
Right.
But she said she wants to see this one. Okay. So, you know, and again, I don't know if it's one you got to see in the theater.
I didn't see the last one in the theater.
Me neither.
I enjoyed it. I mean, you know, I got it on Blu-ray, and I enjoyed it. But I mean, it's, you know, because I watch all my movies on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Going back to the commercialization.
I watch all my movies digitally via iTunes. Or Netflix or Amazon.
See, I sound more like a commercial, though. You sound like you're just like, I feel very uncomfortable saying this.
I don't want to let people know. Anyway, so no, like I said, excited to see it, and
yeah.
So now we're moving into Batman versus Superman.
We're actually moving into commercialization.
To a commercialization of a trailer.
Gotham's been rebuilt, and you know it's better than it ever was.
So these here at least didn't air until after the Super Bowl was over.
Oh, really?
Which might have been while I was confused because it was kind of later.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of excited about watching the game and everything. Yeah, I thought these were really stupid.
Especially that creepy Lex Luthor.
Well, the Bruce Wayne thing. Like, you know, like, I'll say this. Well,
you told me something I'm right before
I'm excited
this
to watch Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne.
Gotham being across the river, across the bay from Metropolis.
So if you guys don't know, what they've done is they've moved Metropolis and Gotham to essentially the West Coast.
Right.
And its relationship is like San Francisco and Oakland.
Yeah.
So if you're not familiar, it's called the Bay Area. There's a bay. One city's on one side, one city's on the other. Can't get more simple than
that. There's a bridge that puts them together.
Now, in the history of comics, Metropolis... Okay.
You want me to do it?
Well, no. I mean, like Gotham like kind of is the stand-in for New York City.
Right.
And I've always thought of Metropolis as the stand-in for L.A.
There was a... A role-playing game book that kind of was canon back in the 80s, where it had a map of
true
the...
True canon.
Yeah, well, yeah. We'll get to that. There was a map that had the East Coast, and it showed where a lot of the cities were, and it literally had it where... what was it? Metropolis sat south of New York City,
right?
Like on the coast. Like, you know, it's obviously a comic book world, so... Right. The coastal line's a little different. So Metropolis was more like in New Jersey.
Okay.
And Gotham was more north of New York City, but New York City existed.
Right.
So, you know, but they never really acknowledged the real cities like Marvel did as much.
Yeah, the only time I really remember seeing like New York is when Kyle Rayner lived there in Green Lantern when Rob Mars was writing the book.
Yeah.
And I think that was just because he was living in New York at the time and it was easier for him to write.
Right. And I mean, the whole thing was like, I think it was the idea that Gotham tied to New York City more.
Yeah.
Well, so I mean, it was a little
New
bit
York
north,
is known
right.
as Gotham. So, right. But yeah.
I don't know. It's just, it's a weird.
So like going back off that like Bay Area, like I know Orlando has its own airport and San Francisco has its own airport and there's San Jose, which is, you know, just like 30 minutes south. This was the dumbest thing ever. Like,
it's the thing that you didn't know that I told you that this is set up because Wonder Woman owns Turkish Airlines.
Right. And so, yes.
Because she's been working on that damn invisible jet forever. And she finally probably got it down because she bought Turkish Airlines and, you know, all that stuff.
Wonder
but
Woman.
But literally,
the
symbol on the tail of the jet
is
a symbol that they've used for Wonder Woman before. So. There's a W type looking thing on
on the plane. Yeah,
I mean, it's
on,
like,
the,
you know,
on the tail section.
Just what's his name? I forget his name. That's playing Lex Luthor.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Just creepy. Just not creepy in a creepy way.
Do you think
like
that's a wig.
Like, I hope it is.
Because we've seen him bald.
Well, I hope that like that it comes off at some point, like when he's in the helicopter or something. When he's falling to his death,
so
they can recast it for the next movie.
So in the commercial, right, especially the Metropolis one, I mean, the Gotham one is what it is. Like, nobody wants to go to the Gotham. It's crime.
Well, right. Yeah, and the thing is they're selling Gotham as being better now. Bruce Wayne's put money into the city. Mm-hmm. You know, I want this city to be better. And you might see a certain celebrity, even though he hasn't been around for a while, because Bruce Wayne was not Batman for a while.
Right. But, okay, so the Metropolis one, right? They're talking about their hero that they love. Everything we've seen in the previews is it's a very xenophobic world that isn't okay with Superman.
Well, yeah, it's false advertisement.
But and I'll
it's
say
literally
this,
false advertisement.
Like, the color palette that they use there, the brightness, that's what Superman should look
like.
Where
was that? Where was
that is what Superman should look like.
Well, and the thing about it is you know, why did they steal the music from the...
Oh, The Flash.
The Flash, they stole the music literally from the Flash TV series. It's at the beginning of every episode where he introduces himself.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't... I
understand that Warner Brothers owns all
this. I think the less we talk about
this,
the better, because like it's just one of those things where...
Let's just go to the next one where it's like...
I mean, we've spent, 2 weeks now bashing DC.
Yeah.
you know, and we're going to bash it a little more when we get to the end. All right. So, Jason Bourne. Let's just zero segue.
Is the movie officially called Jason
Bourne? It's called Jason Bourne. Okay. It was, so nobody knew. It was just Bourne 5.
Right.
Whatever. And then in the title, it's just Jason Bourne.
Yeah, okay.
So, like Rocky.
So that's Balboa, that's official at this point.
I am super excited to see Matt Damon back in this role.
Do you think they're going to wrap it up at this point?
You know, I would like them to.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, in a way, I would like them to.
Because it got, I just watched Bourne Ultimatum last night. You know, I hadn't watched it in a while. That ends that story.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally is over. He swims away. It's like, you know, okay, it's over.
So, but he's back, and he has all his memories.
Right.
So, like, this kind of opens a new storyline. And is who wrote the books?
Ludlum?
Yeah, Robert Ludlum. Thank you. So, I know there's, you know, more than
And after three books, he passed away, there was more books that were written by other people. That, you know, some of them he had authorized to write the character. And that. So there's a lot of stuff like James Bond. There's a lot of stories out there, but it's just one of those things where
I think if you move forward, you start with another story arc, maybe, or maybe you do two of these with Matt Damon to close it out.
Yeah.
And then you do, like, if you want to keep the Bourne movies going, you recast Jason Bourne.
Sure.
You know,
like the James Bond
role. Like the James Bond role. But no, Matt Damon looks great. Some government is not going to have to spend billions of dollars in lives to go save him, so it's a nice, refreshing change of pace.
Billions of dollars and money to kill him.
Yeah, instead, so it's the opposite.
It's literally one of those things where Matt Damon is costing the United States government and many other governments a lot of money to either save his ass or kill his ass.
Yeah, I think I tweeted that it was a nice change of pace to see Matt Damon taking care of himself.
Yeah,
like getting himself out of trouble. Right. So,
but it's cool. Like the, I mean, it's another short trailer, but we've seen Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah. We heard Julia Stiles.
Well, you see her. She's in.
Is she in there? Oh, yeah, I guess. Kind of, yeah.
Which, and I said that, you know, you can't do a Matt Damon Bourne movie without Julia Stiles.
Nope, you cannot. But yeah, like, all in all, I'm excited for this one. I think it looks great. I think he looks good. Like, you know, they're doing very well with him aging. I mean, and like, you know, it's not like he looks bad for his age. I mean, he's attractive
six
man.
6 years older than me.
Yeah.
7 years older than me.
He's an attractive man.
I look pretty good. Well, damn good for my age too. You know,
I know. I would have thought you were like 52, 53.
Hey.
So, but no, excited to see it. The stunts look good. I did like the one where he was riding on the motorcycle and like Superman punched the guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and, but stayed on the bike.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing of these movies is it's the action sells the movie.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't go, you go to see a Mission Impossible movie for Tom Cruise, but you also go to see what crazy stuff is going to happen.
Yeah, like,
I mean, the plane hanging scene was pretty awesome.
Well, so. And like, like the stunt he did in the previous one where he was running around the Burj Dubai.
Yeah.
It's like, you are a crazy, crazy man.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, I'm excited for it. So, yeah, I think it looked good. It was a great surprise because I wasn't expecting it.
Oh, okay.
So
that's cool.
But yeah, because I know it comes out later. I mean, it's not too far from coming out.
It's like
out,
August, so, or we talked about it in the beginning.
I mean,
of the
it's
year.
Definitely one I'm looking forward to. Yeah. So, all right. So next is the, I guess, I mean, you could technically call this the second trailer.
Would you call this ID 4x2?
I call it ID 4x2.
Oh, I like 4x2.
I like 4x2 as well. But ID 4x2 sounds like a droid who has a bad motivator.
Droid brought to you by Lucasfilm.
Or by Google.
No, Droid is owned by Lucasfilm.
Yeah, I know, but
that's why it was brought to you by.
The more I see of this movie, kind of less excited I get for it.
It's just one of those things where it's going to be, you know, like there for horror, there's
it's
torture
Roland
porn.
Emmerich, right?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, for horror, there's torture porn. This is disaster porn. So, yeah. Which we're not getting a lot of this year because, like, people have, I guess they just, you know, it's one of those
I think
things
San Andreas was the breaking point there.
Well, right. I mean, in the X-Men Apocalypse, there was a little bit of destruction, and it's like, you know, San Andreas was just overboard.
But,
so.
like, watching the sky on fire over London and, like, everything falling down. Like,
right, yeah.
It's like, all right, first off, thank you for not destroying New York or San Francisco.
Well, they, you know, never probably...
Let's move on to a different city for a while.
How much rebuilding can you do in 20 years?
Oh.
I mean, it's like the Turkish Airlines.
Yeah.
Man, well, Metropolis in like 2 days, I guess. Yeah. Superman did a lot of that itself, probably. Yeah.
He needs the PR work. But
Lex Luthor was like, I took care of this.
The scene with Liam Hemsworth where he's flying the plane and that astronaut costume he's wearing. And I call it a costume because it looks so cheap and bad that it takes you out of the moment.
Yeah.
Of what should be like a kick-ass like space fight scene.
In all honesty, these movies like Independence Day, I'm just going to see cities get destroyed.
I mean, I'm going to go see
it. Yeah. I mean, that's where I told you. I'll be waiting for when Will Smith shows up at the end.
Yeah, I mean, you've been saying that since...
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's going to use the Randy Quaid line, I'm back, boys! And then he's going to, you know, come in and say, I got one of these finally, and fly in and destroy everything.
It's time to save the world. You know, he's got to mention save the world in every movie. I think he does it in Hitch, too. I don't know, I've never seen it.
They might, yeah.
I've never seen Hitch, so I wouldn't know. All right, so Independence Day 4 or 2, whatever.
4x2.
Yeah. You know, the buildings falling and
well, I like the idea that it's not just a laser beam coming down and blowing the shit out of everything. It's literally them pulling the city up in the air and then dropping it on everything. It's
what goes up must come down. Yeah.
At some point, Jeff Goldblum has to say, must go faster.
What if at the end, or what if like part of this movie is they've destroyed the mothership? And it's crashing to Earth, and they kill more people than they save.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
We wipe ourselves out by fending them off. Right. You know, that would be a great way to just end it all.
Yeah, so, an extinction level event. Yeah, that'd be cool.
So there's no Avengers there to save us. So.
Enough people get off the planet that. Yeah. The Earth was destroyed. You know, it'll be the Morgan Freeman close where it's like, the Earth was destroyed, but we survived.
We will endeavor on.
That's that whole, what was it? The asteroid movie. Deep Impact. Yeah, where at the end he's like, and the waters reached here, but we survived. And, you know, and they have to do that at the end.
The waters reached all the way to the Ohio Valley.
Maybe they recast the Will Smith role. Morgan Freeman's going to play.
There you go.
Yes.
I love it. All right. Then this one was a commercial. It wasn't like
a preview
for anything. It was a commercial for Coke. And I just call it Hulk versus Ant-Man for the Coke mini commercial.
I think that's what they
called it, too. And,
Now, these are the miniature cans, right? These are the little...
Yeah, the little mini, like, 8 ounce.
It's like, I couldn't even open a can.
They're 8 ounce cans. a minute and 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Coca-Cola, the ad team, Marvel, shows they understand their characters better in a minute and 20 seconds than Fox understands the X-Men, than Fox understands the Fantastic Four.
I was going to say the Fox...
Then, you know,
Warner
Sony,
Brothers understands their characters.
Well, and I'm sticking with Marvel here for a minute.
Oh, okay.
But then Sony understands Spider-Man.
Okay.
Then Warner Brothers understands storytelling, and you know,
yeah.
I mean, it was a fun, complete story. Not too long before this one aired, the Bud Light one with Amy Schumer and Seth Rogen, where they're kind of stumping, like, because it's a political thing.
Oh, okay.
About how Americans don't agree on anything. And one of the things we can all agree on is that everybody likes Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this one shows up just a, you know,
Paul Rudd's voice.
Breaks later with Paul Rudd's voice.
Yeah, obviously most of the commercial was CG.
The Hulk looked great.
The Hulk looked like, you know, he had just popped off that Avengers Quinjet and was walking into this laboratory.
Laboratory. DV.
I liked it because it stuck with the characterizations.
It was just
of them.
Fun.
I mean, you know, because obviously Bruce controls the Hulk.
Yeah.
And you just stole his... I mean, the Ant-Man, being the thief he is, just stole his Coke. And it's like, oh, hey, Bruce, don't mind me. And
you don't mind if I take this last Coke, do you?
Yeah, he minds. Yeah, he does.
But, it was like I said, it was fun. It looked great. You know, it's great just kind of exposure for Ant-Man going into Civil War.
It obviously shows that Hulk is Team Cap.
Obviously. You know, I mean, they're buddies at the end there. He loves his green eyes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Hulk wasn't in the Civil War comic.
No, he was on another planet. He was on Sekar.
He was off on Planet Hulk battling it out with Silver Savage.
Yes. So,
although I did like the movie where they replaced him with Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah, it was cool. So, both ways were cool. Yeah. I liked that
Silver Savage was awesome.
Could use his surfboard as a shield.
But it makes me miss the fact that Mark Ruffalo is not going to be in that movie.
Think it's okay just for the fact that they, you know, obviously have said he's in Thor Ragnarok. And
I guess I was reading something. I was reading something the other day, about how intelligent the Hulk's going to be in Ragnarok, and how much like he'll be able to speak and stuff like that. So,
well, and I think it's the whole thing that, you know, at the end of Age of Ultron, you know, they still hadn't found the Quinjet, but they figured he had swum to Fiji, and it's like, you know, Bruce was going to find himself.
Yeah.
Was going to find, you know, and become at peace with the Hulk, mm-hmm. because it's the thing that they are two characters.
Yeah.
And that, you know, pretty much are in one body.
Did you like the Doc Green thing they did in the comics with Hulk?
I don't think I read that.
It was after Banner got shot in the head.
Oh, no, I didn't read that. Oh. I think the last thing I had read with Hulk was Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
So I thought was a cool idea.
They tried to fix it with Extremis.
Okay.
And he Hulked out while it was happening, and Extremis fixed the pathways in the Hulk.
Okay.
And he became Doc Green.
Okay.
As he called himself.
Right. But done that kind of story.
I know, but
before.
it was cool because he absolutely could not fall asleep.
Okay.
Because Banner would, you know, wake back up.
Right.
And then at the same time, the Extremis was degrading. So he was like kind of a Flowers for Algernon kind of thing. So it was just a cool story because he was kind of I can't even say it.
What, megalomaniac?
Thank you.
Okay.
And he was going around, he was getting rid of all the other gamma irradiated powers.
Oh, okay.
So, like he depowered Betty Ross and everything.
But I think that the whole thing, like, you know, even Ruffalo said he doesn't know if they could do a Hulk movie.
I don't think they can.
I mean, it's the idea of money-wise.
Yeah.
Not even talking about story-wise now. But money-wise, they've already burnt money on two movies. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, one of them was decent enough that, you know, they tied it
into the
Marvel. Well,
The Incredible Hulk is canon.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. They tied it into the universe because it was a decent enough story and told in a well enough manner. But it still did not make any money.
Well,
because Iron Man had come out, like, what, a month before that?
It was, it was May versus August.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So, you know, and when you release a movie in August, it doesn't do as well as it would in, like, you know, March, April, May now.
I think people for The Incredible Hulk were still kind of shell-shocked from
Ang
Lee's Hulk.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. So yeah, anyway, just Marvel killed it here.
The Coca-Cola commercial was better than the Ang Lee movie.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. The Coca-Cola commercial was better than Fanforestic.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
All right.
I'm glad you explained that last week because people probably were like, what the hell is he talking about?
Because it's fan for stick.
Yeah.
That's how they wrote it. That's how you
have
to
and if you look
it.
At it, you're so, yeah, you're hitting it on the mark.
But
so we're going to the last trailer that we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Which is coming out this Friday.
Yes.
Deadpool.
And this was just like, there was nothing new that we saw here.
There was a little bit more Colossus.
Oh, I guess there was, yeah. Like, it showed him dragging Gina Carano.
Which, you know, that's one of the pluses to this. This was a movie where I was, like, kind of on the fence if I was going to go see it or not.
No, you
weren't. Obviously, we would have went and seen it just to review it. But seeing Colossus was, like, I'm like, that's probably...
He's big, and he's muscular, and he's all metal.
My second favorite X-Men?
Yeah, I like Colossus a lot.
Iceman probably being my first.
Yeah, Iceman's my second.
Yeah.
So I go...
But I think I love Iceman because of Spider-Man is amazing.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was my first introduction to the character as well.
So it's like...
So I go Cyclops, Iceman, and then, like, depending on the storyline, Nightcrawler or Colossus.
Okay.
So, now, you know, I bashed Joss Whedon a little bit ago. I will say this. He wrote a fine Colossus.
Oh, in the story that he did?
In the New Mutants or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He wrote and the relationship between Colossus and Kitty Pryde was spot on. So I will give him, you know, credit and love.
Give him
that.
Credit where credit's due. Yeah.
Now the big thing about this was the line about Deadpool always wanted to be a professional athlete because he wanted to have babies in cities all over the world.
It's just it's along the line of Deadpool, like, you know, and the lines being delivered by Ryan Reynolds, it's like you're just like, yeah.
Well, and he's in that suit.
Yeah.
Now, how bad does that suit have to smell?
Oh, well, he took it home, so you know.
Did you read that story where Ben Affleck asked if he could have one of the Batman suits, and they said, "Yeah, for $100,000."
No.
Yeah,
I didn't read that.
And Ryan Reynolds was like asked for a Deadpool suit. They told him no, so he just stole one.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I think like I seen the thing where they were interviewing him, and he said that the last day of shooting, he had the suit on, and he was walking off set with it, and they're like, "Well, are you going to take the suit off?" And he's like, "No, I'm going home with it." Nobody stopped him though. It's like,
well, because at that point, he is Deadpool.
Why wouldn't you let somebody have a costume? Or you know, it's one of those things where you spent money on it, but you also can negotiate that thing where it's like, you know, you're getting paid. Yeah. To be that character.
I forget.
Why can't you be like, I want one of those suits?
There, I forget which actor. I was listening to them. I think it was on Nerdist where they had talked about in every movie contract, they negotiate that they get to have say on the wardrobe.
Yeah.
And then they get to keep the wardrobe afterwards. And it's like,
it's fair enough.
That's brilliant.
I mean, you know, it's like Patrick Stewart or any of the cast of Next Generation.
Yeah.
You know, they should have got to take home something, and they probably did. And that's the thing. It's like, if you've worked on something and you've worked on it for like...
That makes really hot Earl Grey tea. That's what I would do.
That would be cool. But like, you know, you're working on a movie for 3 to 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fair enough that you say, yeah, take home a cowl. At least take home a cowl. Yeah. You know? Take home a cape. Yeah. It's one of those things where don't be, you know, these studios are such dicks anymore.
Yeah.
That it's like, you know, just relax a little bit and let people have fun. Yep. Because if you don't let your actors have fun, that's not going to show in the movie.
Nope.
And we're not going to have fun.
No. And I think we saw that in
Man
of Steel.
That's pretty much segueing into what.
All right. So, okay, Deadpool. Give everybody like a brief, like kind of, if you can, outline of Deadpool. Like where he came from and... why he's in our lives.
I think like Deadpool was part of the re-energizing of the X-Men.
He was the New Mutant.
Yeah, well, that's part of the X-Men. I mean, New Mutants, the book, was part of the X-Men universe. New Mutants was kind of like just not a good book, per se. You know, it had been a good book, but it was slowly declining.
Right.
So they had to introduce new characters, and Deadpool was one of them. I'm forgetting who else. Gideon. Gideon was another one of them that, you know, and Cable and a few others had come into that book. And at the time that was Rob Liefeld was doing the art on the book, and Fabian, and sorry, I might slaughter up this last name, Nacenza.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I don't know either way.
Nacenza is kind of the way it looks like it's spelled. He was writing the book.
Right.
So it's one of those things where Marvel, and I think Shooter was running the company still at that time.
New 52 Flash, when he came in and was first writing it, was a great book.
Right, and he's a good writer.
He is a really good writer.
So they introduced these characters, and, you know, obviously Rob Liefeld was one of the big names back then, kind of along with Lee and McFarlane and every one of the Image boys, pretty much. And, you know, that's pretty much the history. And from there, I mean, it was, you know... He was there as an assassin. Mm-hmm. His costume looked like Spider-Man's, but he was very similar to Deathstroke.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't real sarcastic at the beginning. And I think that was Joe Kelly and Ed McGuinness.
Yeah.
They're the ones where the break the fourth wall stuff started happening. And, you know, Joe Kelly's writing is a little bit more fun.
Yeah.
I guess not as serious. He doesn't take himself as seriously when he's writing stuff unless he's told to.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, he's written some Superman stuff where it was really good, too. Mm-hmm. So
he did the Parallax stuff, right?
I think he might have read some of that.
Worlds at War thing.
Yeah.
But no, so this article that we're reading, and it was from the New York Times of all places.
Yeah.
It's called Deadpool Meet the Prime Mover Behind the Mercenary. And so I got hot under the collar reading this. And Mike Norton... from the guy who draws Battle Pug, is the one who shared this. This is how I found it.
Oh, okay.
And his post was like, "Hey, guess the 3 paragraphs that make me want to throw up in my mouth."
Yeah,
you know, because basically what this boils down to, and we'll link to this in the show notes, is Rob Liefeld is basically taking full credit for everything that has Deadpool.
Yeah.
Now,
well, and Cable too.
And Cable too. Sorry. When we were at the Cincinnati Comic Expo, the guy who drew the black Spider-Man costume coming out of Secret Wars.
Mike Zeck.
Mike Zeck. this made me mad about that. He was sitting there like, his wife was his barker.
Yeah.
And she was like, meet the creator of the Black Spider-Man suit. It's like, really? Some writer told him.
Right.
Some editor told them that they needed to do this. Rob Liefeld, in this article, presents this as like, Deadpool was his idea. He wrote the character. He drew the character.
Right.
He came up with all the designs.
Right.
I'll say this. It was a very Rob Liefeld looking character at the beginning because he was covered in pouches and you couldn't ever see his feet because they were so small.
Right.
But, you know.
What he even says in the he didn't even make this character good. He stole ideas from Spider-Man's costume and from Deathstroke, Wolverine. Yeah. And, you know, he didn't say the Deathstroke thing, but we know the Deathstroke thing.
And we've known that. Like, we've known, like, he was a, like, because his name is Wade Wilson.
Right.
Like Slade Wilson, right? You know, he looks like Deathstroke. He, you know, carries a sword.
Yeah, the only
like
thing he doesn't have is one eye. He's not missing one eye.
Well, and you know,
if they would have done that, then DC would have been him, like, you know, right away.
But I mean, the fact that they made this character look like Spider-Man was obviously, you know, hey, we're gonna do a
Spider-Man colors,
a Spidey-esque character, But yeah, no, it's just one of these things where listening to this or reading this, this isn't even
a character I care about.
And I'm,
I will wholeheartedly say that I am not a major X-Men fan besides the Fox cartoon.
Sure.
I love the Fox cartoon. I am not a fan of Deadpool at all. You know, I understand the character.
Of the two of us, I'm the bigger fan, for sure.
I understand the character. I totally get the why people like him. He is not a character that I like.
The times I've liked Deadpool the most is when he's teamed with Cable.
Okay, yeah.
And then I also like Deadpool when he's teamed with Cap. Because the relationship between Steve Rogers and Wade Wilson is one that I don't think you can fully ever understand.
Right.
But Cap respects him.
Yeah.
And Cap knows how to get, like, the good out of him.
Yeah.
You know? How to draw him back to the light. And it's one of these things where reading this, like, anytime someone like this, like, I mean, this would be like, and Robert Kirkman's quoted in this.
Yeah.
And this would be like Robert Kirkman turning around and saying, you know, I've done all of The Walking Dead, you know. It wasn't a collaboration.
Right, yeah.
You know, and that's what this guy is doing. And you know, all of this is a collaboration.
Yeah.
It's not just the writer.
Unless you are writing the book, drawing the book, penciling the book, coloring the book,
editing
the book, publishing the book. I mean, if you're doing all that, you know, even buying the book, selling the book to comic book stores, you're doing all of that. It's your creation.
Yeah.
If you are doing it for a company, he did it for Marvel. Marvel owns the character. He helped co-create the character.
Marvel need to take a picture of your face right now.
Because I'm like pissed right now.
Angry.
Oh yeah. But it's seriously one of those things where it's like I understand this and I've never written a comic book.
Yeah.
I've, you know, drawn comic book characters for friends and, you know, done that type of stuff before. I understand that these are characters owned by Marvel, now Disney.
Yep.
They are owned by Warner Brothers.
Yep.
They are owned by Image. It's the creator owned, but it's still one of those things where when we watch The Walking Dead on TV, it is created by Robert Kirkman. It is created by Tony Moore and it is created by
Charlie Adler.
I mean, that's the thing is it is a co-creation.
And we've talked about this with Tony Moore in the past who, you know, he was involved in getting that universe set up.
Yeah.
Anything after the sixth issue, he doesn't have a whole lot of involvement.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, he drew a lot of covers. Until, like, 20-something. But it's one of those things where, you know what?
But he still walks around like he's involved with it.
Right.
You know?
You helped co-create something that blew up. Yeah. And, yeah, awesome that you helped co-create it.
Good for
you. But
you
only
helped
drew,
co-create it.
Like...
Six
of,
issues.
Of the characters that are still on the show, you only drew, like, what, three?
Rick Michonne and Andrea. Is there anybody else left from the...
Well, Andrea's gone off the show.
No, from the original.
Oh, from the original
comic.
The comic. I'm talking the TV show where you know they included his name, and probably didn't have to.
No,
you know. I mean, the only thing is like you know if you, Liefeld's pretty much pissing on everybody else by saying, "Oh, I did this. So if it was me, it was just me."
Do you remember when Green Arrow or Green Lantern?
And I could
Lantern,
just hear that voice too. It was me. I did this all.
You remember when Green Lantern came out?
Yeah.
And there was the article about how Geoff Johns was responsible for all of Green Lantern and the reason that it made the movie. And, like, in the article, he was taking, like, full credit for things. And then the movie came out and it stunk monkey balls.
They don't take credit for any of
it. And then he's like, I wasn't involved in that. It's like, well, I have the wire.
Sorry, but yeah, you are, because you created Parallax.
I have the article that shows you saying that you are responsible for all of this. So you were on set helping them make decisions.
Yeah, bad decisions.
Yeah, horrible. But, you know, so... Here's the thing, is Rob Liefeld is a controversial character in the world of comics.
And, you know,
that's his art is hit or miss.
But it's one of those things where you can be controversial and still not piss on people, you know, that you worked with.
Yeah, just the way he's coming across here and the things that he's saying here are... I guess I just don't understand that. Like, you know, like this show.
Yeah.
Right? This started with someone else and myself.
Right.
And, you know, I was always, you know, I've always shared that, you know, co-creation. You and I, we're partners in this.
Right.
I'm, you know.
You, in all honesty, I wasn't, like, at all wanting to participate on a normal basis in this show.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where, at a certain point, you asked me, can you come on?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I can do it. And then I'm like, okay, I like doing it. You know, sometimes it's time consuming because, you know, but it's one of those things where when you came up with it, you were talking to me about it years ago and saying, I want to do this. And I'm like, cool. You know, it's like, who are you going to do it with? Because I knew you were kind of backdoor asking me to do it. But I was like, I didn't really want to do it. You know, I know that it's time consuming. Mm-hmm. I know that podcasts can be very time consuming. But it's one of those things where you give credit where credit's due. Mm-hmm. You came up with the idea. You came up with the name. You had a co-host. Mm-hmm. You know, Brian Williams was your co-host. Yeah. You know, Brian Williams didn't want to participate anymore on a normal basis.
Right. He has, you know, he has his own thing going on, which is things awesome.
Going on
and
that.
It's one of those things
where I'm like, I can give you a couple hours out of my week.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I do.
You give me more than a couple hours, though, because you...
Well, and it's one of those things where I'm doing the stuff that we've done, where we always talk about this stuff.
And yeah, I mean,
and it's one of those things where now it's like we have an outlet to do it.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where if anybody said, who came up with the Infamous Podcast? I would never say, I came up with the Infamous Podcast. I'd be like, that's Brian's baby.
And I wouldn't even say I came up with it.
I'd be like, that's Brian's second kid right there. You know, it's like, that's the one that, you know... We can lock in a room.
This is one I love.
when you listen to this in 20 years, Haley, he didn't mean it.
I did. Anyway, no. All right. So, you know, it's just like, as like I'm someone who, like, I like to create things.
Well, yeah.
Like, you know, I like to write. I do.
We all have imaginations all and, you know.
And to see this, and this will just be the last thing I say about it. And you, I'll let you close out
sure.
on your thoughts on this. But, like. To see this and to see this movie that's about to come out and has gotten great reviews so far for the most part is going to literally change the game for comic book movies to say, hey, we can take these more adult characters. We can make adult movies.
All right. Yeah.
And, you know, it's going to make $60 million.
Sure.
That's what I'm guessing right now.
He'll get a little bit of that money.
Well, and he will. But and Fabian, he deserves it.
Fabian
and,
will get a little bit of that money, too, because deserves it, too.
Jerry Dugan should get some of this money because he's the reason this character is so popular currently.
I'm sure Joe and Ed will get some of the money, too. It's one of those things where there's going to be a lot of...
But to see this, and instead of, like, lifting up the industry and saying... And, like, I'm getting hot under the collar now.
Oh, sure,
And because, I mean, we love this stuff. And instead of saying, hey, I created this with all these people who are still doing things.
Right.
Go check out their work. Go check out my work.
Yeah.
No, he's sitting down saying,
this is what I'm working
like,
on right now. This is what they're working on right
now. Yeah, he's sitting down saying, well, I made this. This is mine.
In all honesty, you know he doesn't talk to any of these people anymore.
Not at all. None of them want
anything to do with
him. They
don't
want
to talk to him.
So,
I mean, he got kicked out of Image. How do you get kicked out of Image?
Got kicked out of DC, got kicked out of Image, got kicked out of Marvel.
Right, yeah.
Who's the problem there? DC, Image, and Marvel? No.
It's just let your ego relax a little bit and, you know, give credit where credit's due. I mean, we've seen it recently on that Captain America special where they talked about Jack and Joe.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, everybody says, Jack and Joe is the reason Captain America exists.
You know what, though? But Stan Lee
is
the reason that Cap is so relevant.
Right,
That, like, and they showed
but
that
even
was great.
Stan says that. Stan was like, if Jack and Joe wouldn't have created this character, we wouldn't have had what we have today.
Nope, I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. Okay, so
Let's jump to the next.
You want to just go to the next ass hat?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Sorry, but yeah, there's literally two ass hats that are talking this weekend that pissed me off, okay. And that literally that's why we're not doing a Star Trek review and we're doing this instead.
All right. So you shared this with me.
Yeah.
And you just kind of like threw it out there at me.
Yeah.
And
I didn't even read the article until after I sent it to you. Because well, I literally read the title. Let me just read the title. Zack Snyder says he did not change Superman, followed the, quote, true canon. And it's in quotes because it's from Bleeding Cool, right. And they know how to do this, you know, stuff a little bit
they
better
than most
people.
They know how to do this great clickbait,
yeah.
You know, headlines. All right, so Zack Snyder is saying he did not change Superman, that he followed the true canon.
Yeah.
All right, first off. Metropolis and Gotham are not across the bay from each other.
Exactly.
Failure number one. Second off, Jonathan Kent was not a monster.
No.
Jonathan Kent in his is a monster. Huh? He's let everybody die, protect yourself.
Yeah.
Ma Kent, monster. Yeah. Don't save people. Just take care of yourself.
Well, he's writing.
He doesn't have any.
What he thinks is a monster.
But he really? Doesn't have any of the values of what
this
Superman.
What this Superman movie, The Man of Steel. Was a sequel to The Watchmen.
Yeah.
I mean, literally. Yeah. The only two He's movies Captain, that Zack Snyder has whatever, done...
Dr. Midnight. Dr. Manhattan.
Dr. Manhattan.
Sorry.
But the only two Zack Snyder movies that have been, like, decent, that I've enjoyed, were Dawn of the Dead remake.
Okay.
And Watchmen. And Watchmen, he
not
literally...
Not 300?
Was that him?
Yeah.
Okay, well, okay, then three. But two of them, he literally followed the comic book...
Panel for panel.
Yeah. I forgot that he did 300.
So the remake, Dawn of the Dead, right?
Yeah.
So Dawn of the Dead, a remake.
Yeah.
Which stayed really close to the original. It's just a little better.
Took place in a mall.
A little better graphics. Yeah. Watchmen. Other than the change at the end, which really, to be honest, would never have worked on a movie screen.
Right.
Panel for panel.
Right.
And every character was Batman.
Pretty much.
300. Panel for panel.
Right.
Essentially. There's a few changes here and there, but they're minor, and you know most people probably don't realize.
It's not noticeable. No. It's not like anything where you're like, oh, God, they changed this.
So then
this.
You go look at Sucker Punch.
I watched it once. I found it in a $5 bin, I think, at Walmart.
I've never been able to finish it. That's how bad
it.
I think
I finished it. And I just was like, when I got to the end, I'm like, that was it? That was the whole, yeah. You know?
So, and then Man of Steel.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's done other things, but maybe not.
I don't know.
And
piss people off.
I don't care to look it up. But Man of Steel. All right. I don't have a problem that Superman killed Zod at the end.
Totally made sense.
I have a problem that he saved only one family.
Yeah.
Like Robert Kirkman in Invincible, long, long ago, put this just kind of fun little thing in there where if a villain is too strong for you, take them into space.
Yeah.
Take him into space. Right, Get him away from people. You know, if Mark Grayson,
yeah,
in Invincible, who's you know one of the like least intelligent superheroes ever, can figure that out.
Right. Why couldn't Superman figure that out?
Yeah. His Superman was not, and you know he even had the dialogue with Jor-El saying, "Let them follow you into the light."
Yeah.
There isn't a stitch of light in the movie.
Right. Yeah.
Not one little bit of light.
Any light that's in the movie is muted by whatever lens filter he was using.
Like, you know, his suit, like, you know, he's if he wants to follow any canon that he's followed, it's either been the New 52 canon that's put into place.
Yeah.
Or it's the Earth One story from J. Michael Straczynski.
The New 52 canon wasn't even in place. It was put in place because of the Man of Steel. I mean, seriously.
True. Yeah. I mean, no, you're right.
I was forgetting about
the timeline.
Yeah. I mean, he says he was interviewed on a podcast called the Hall of Justice podcast
via the Hollywood,
Hollywood Reporter. And he says people are always like, you changed Superman. He says, if you're not a comic fan, you know that I didn't change Superman. I literally wrote down, what comic books are you reading? Because I'm sorry. Have you ever read John Byrne's
Man of Steel?
Yeah. Have you ever read any of Roger Stern stuff? Have you ever read any of Dan Jurgens stuff? Have you ever read Superman for All Seasons? Which, if you want to do a Superman story that's an origin story, that we don't need an origin story anymore for this character, that's the story
Grant Morrison's Superman.
Yeah.
There's talked to Brandon Montclair about All-Star Superman.
Yeah.
And oh, how God, great man. That is. Jeez. Do that. That's an easy one to do.
Could you do that on the big screen?
Yes, easily. Yeah.
And make easily. It, I mean, they did it as an animated movie.
Yeah.
But I mean,
and they changed things in the animated movie that made it work better than the comic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not one of these people who sits there and says, you have to follow things panel for panel. But when you have a career of following things panel for panel that work, and then when you go away from that equation and it doesn't work, you can't turn around and say, I followed true canon. Where you absolutely,
if you were
not.
A comic book fan, you would know that I follow true canon. And I'm like, bullshit.
And he talks about Richard Donner's 1978. If anything, you followed Donner's canon because you killed Jonathan Kent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the original canon, that's the only thing. In the original canon, in 1938 canon, both the Kents were dead. But Clark had grown up in an orphanage, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they adopted him when he was already older.
Yeah.
And, they died. They were an old couple. They died. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just the whole fact that, you know, why do we always have to kill Ma or Pa?
Right.
Kent, you know, it's like, why
especially
can't they
when
be
you
around?
Have a great actor like Kevin Costner.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Costner is, you know, a really good actor. And then they just blew him away with a tornado, literally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, obviously I'm going to go see this movie. But I'm just like, do we need Zack Snyder?
If we weren't doing this show.
It would be one that I probably would probably just wait,
I would
and
wait
put
until
on
it comes out
list.
On video. Yeah. I would wait until it comes out on video. Yeah.
But then again, I would have done the same thing with Deadpool too.
Well, yeah. But I'm a little different
there. But that's the whole thing is because, and it is, it's literally to the point now where, and I'm going to just, you know, say asshats. They are. They're, because of asshats who are tied to these characters at this point, it's one of those things where, do I want to go see this?
Yeah.
Do I want to spend my money? It's like...
Well, in the show notes, I wrote Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if that's a Freudian slip or anything, I wouldn't know. But, you know, it's one of these things where I'm not a fan of the Donner movies. I don't really think they've ever done Superman right in the movies.
See, I enjoy the first Donner movie. The second
Donner
one wasn't really a Donner
and
movie.
Like, I'll honestly agree with him here. The Donner stuff, like, took that one side of his personality and exaggerated it.
Right.
He did the same thing with the dark side.
Yeah.
You know, the more vicious side of his personality.
It's just the whole thing. There's the balance in that character because, you know.
And there has to be.
Batman is a tragic character.
Batman has no balance.
Batman has just a major tragedy that happened in his life. Mm-hmm. Whereas Superman had a major tragedy that happened. But because of the Kents, he became a better man.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's not dressing up in a dark costume.
The key that you just said right there.
Yeah.
He became a better man.
Uh-huh.
Before anything, it's the man versus Superman. He is a man. Clark Kent is not a mask for him.
Right.
Clark Kent is who he is. Superman is who he becomes to protect the people that he loves.
Right.
Batman, on the other hand,
Bruce Wayne is the mask.
Has been the mask since the day those bullets ripped through his parents.
Well, did you ever read the Speeding Bullets?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That Superman, it's the Superman Elseworlds called Speeding Bullets, where Clark Kent's ship crashes on the Wayne Manor. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know if you had read
that. Oh, yeah, right. I read it, like, right after you left.
Yeah. his ship crashes on Wayne Manor. Bruce had died, as a child. And that, so Martha and Thomas adopt him.
And name him
and
Bruce.
Raise him. And he died. They die the same way. Except his powers kick in.
Yeah.
And he has to become a better Batman, I guess you would say. And he literally knows how to balance out Bruce Wayne and Batman. And it's like, somebody should just go back and read those books.
And he starts getting dark. And that's where Lois Lane comes into play. And Lois is the one who actually gives him the balance in that story. And at the end, you know, it's not a spoiler because this has been out for like 20 years.
Yeah.
So if you haven't read it, that's on you. He shows up and it's Superman.
Yeah.
You know,
because the world that
he
lived
killed
in didn't
Lex.
Need.
He killed Lex because Lex was awful.
Right.
Awful, awful, awful.
But I mean, it's just the whole thing where in that world, they didn't need a Batman.
I
want to
know what
canon.
Yeah. I want to know what canon he's talking.
Yeah. If he could like put down the books that he's actually read, you know, because I guarantee you he's never picked up a comic book and read it in his life, except for, you know, when he had to do a movie because somebody gave him the money and said, here, do this.
They gave him a stack of books to read.
Yeah. You have to read Watchmen before you direct it, because if you don't, you're going to get it wrong. It's pretty much what it was.
You know, and I liked Watchmen.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
I didn't necessarily like Watchmen as a comic book because I'm not the biggest Alan Moore fan.
Right.
And, you know, I know that's kind of sacrilegious to say, but...
Don't worry, I'll kick him in the nuts after the show because I'm already pissed off.
I deserve it. But, you know, yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
You know, it's just at so this point, you know,
I'm cooled down about it, but it's just one of those things where it's very like frustrating to have people who are supposed to be, you know, the architects of these universes pissing on their creations.
But like, so like when you like kind of just want like for us back and forth how we feel about this, because like, you know, when you shared this with me, like my average like word count response to you is maybe 10.
Yeah.
Like, actually, probably less
like
than
that. Like, cool. I usually get cool.
I like cool.
Or,
cool. Something awesome. Sweet.
Yeah. Something like, with a one word response.
One word.
But then I get like a whole sentence and I'm like,
no, you got a pair. You got two paragraphs.
Yeah. And I'm like reading it like, yeah.
So, I mean, it obviously like invoked something in us. And, you know, for the people out there who.
They do this so we'll talk about them.
Yeah,
is really what it
and
is.
And it's fine. And, it's and like, it should, you know, be talked, but it should be
But it's
be
one of those
about.
Things where people that are above them, that are paying them, should be listening to us and saying, wait a minute, maybe there's something to it.
Which is a great segue into the next thing we're talking about. Okay. So we've got, just to recap, we've got a guy who is claiming he's the sole creator of a character for a new movie coming out this week. We have a guy who is creating, which I've said numerous times on the show, a flawed universe.
Right.
Who is saying that comic book fans don't understand what he's doing. Because
or comic book fans should know what he did
he's
because
using,
it's part of the canon.
Quote, unquote, the true canon.
Right. All right.
Which leads us into this great article that I found on Bleeding Cool again. Bleeding Cool is knocking out of the park this week.
They're very good about what they do. Well, and this one was written by the person.
Right.
So
what was her name? Jen King. And Jen King is the owner of the Eisner-nominated comic book store, Space Cadets Collection.
Near Houston.
Yeah, Space Book Collection, near Houston, Texas. And she has a problem running a comic book store today. Mm-hmm. So, as I mentioned at the top of the show, one of my dreams is to own a comic book store. I read this, and I was like, do I really want to own a comic book
store? And what have I been telling you for years?
I know. Yeah. So, you're not the only one who has, like, warned me against this.
Well, the whole thing is Brian's always talked about wanting to own a comic book store, wanting me to run the comic book store. But I'm like, I'm going to run it my way. Because I already know, like, what she writes about in here, I know about. Because
you've
obviously
worked in the industry for so long.
Yeah, I've been working, you know, with Jeff at Queen City Comics for... Mm-hmm. 20 plus years, and it's like I've learned a lot of stuff that people probably don't realize that I know. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just one of those things where you catch on to it. Yeah. if you like hang out at a retailer's establishment for, you know, a few hours a day once a week, you start to catch on.
I picked up stuff just you know, the years.
But it's
of
one of those
there.
Things where if you're there even working part-time one day a week, you know, and, you know, there's downtime, obviously, where you talk to the people that work at the store, the owner of the store, you learn a lot more.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where she lays it out pretty much like we've all talked about at our stores.
Yeah. And so, like, I read this and I asked you the question, who is the real customer from the publisher's point of view? Is it the people who buy and read the comics, or is it the stores that are first forced to buy certain amounts of books to be able to get more valuable books to sell?
From my observation, the publishers think that the people who come in and buy the comic books are the customers. Mm-hmm. That's why they do their multi, you know.
The lenticular covers.
I'm even one who gets multiple variant covers.
But you don't do it for every book. And you only do it for one particular line.
Right, yeah.
And that's more
And it's more because I collect everything from that line, yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, when... And it's Valiant. Valiant Comics does variant covers of pretty much every book now. When they started publishing and they started doing that, Jeff asked me, do you want all? And I'm like, yeah, I want them all. I want them all because it's part of the thing that I've always, I have, I think almost every Valiant book that was published.
Want them all.
Well, yeah, exactly. But
I want them now.
The thing about it is, is that you're hurting the publishers are hurting the retailers.
Yeah.
Because they force some of these retailers, and you know, there's retailers out there that can afford this stuff. Midtown Comics, you know, Mile High, Big Apple. You know, those are a few that come to mind. Well, yeah, they can afford it, but even some of them have cut back on this stuff because of the fact that you want us to buy, and you know, I say us because
okay. So real quick before we go into what they want us to buy. If you are new to comics or you haven't collected comics, a variant cover is a cover that is done by a different artist and has no art on it whatsoever.
Yeah. It could be a blank cover.
Yeah, it can be a blank cover. That isn't just the traditional cover that comes with the story. Yeah. Like The Walking Dead 150 just came out.
Had five different covers?
15 covers.
Oh, did it have 15?
It was a lot. It was maybe...
I think I only seen five.
Okay, maybe it wasn't five.
Tony Moore did one of them.
Ryan Ottley did one. Charlie Adler did one.
Like, pretty much anybody who's worked with Kirkman
did
a cover. And then I think some of the other Image artists did covers.
So,
You know, and it's one of those things where, as a buyer of comic books, you have a choice to buy what you want to buy.
And so, like, I do... Sometimes I do variants, but I don't buy both versions.
Right.
Like, the Star Wars books that have the action figures.
Oh, yeah. Instead okay, the action one, figure packs.
I always get the action figure
pack. Okay.
Just because I like those.
Yeah.
It's fun. Scotty Young, when he does variant covers, exactly. Especially for Star Wars.
Yeah.
But a lot of the Marvel stuff, I'll go out of the way to get his variant cover. Right. But I don't buy the other one. Whereas a lot of collectors, what they want to do is they want to go and they want to get all... five,
right?
You know, three, however many versions.
Just pick a number. We'll use that as the number we're going to talk about.
They want to get all three variant covers.
Yeah. So there's three variants coming out. They want all three of them.
Right.
And here's the part that we'll say. A book's $3.99. A regular book's $3.99.
Yeah.
One of those variant covers could be $29.95. $29.95. Yeah. I mean, in reality, the retailer's going to charge $29.95 because that book is 1 in 500, and you know they have to sell it for that price because they had to order so many books. When you say
1 in 500, he means they had to order 500 books just to get one variant of those. Now, Dark Knight 3 just launched.
Yeah.
Okay. They had 1 in 500, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 5,000, 1 in 10,000.
Yeah.
Variants, where. And we both know Jeff has talked to us about a store where a friend of his ordered the 1 in 10,000.
Yeah.
And he was stuck with, you know,
10,000 copies of Dark Knight 3.
Yeah. And then he had like 2,500 copies. And he's a bigger store. So, but he had 2,500 copies that he couldn't sell.
Right.
And Jeff bought some from him.
Sure.
Just like at pennies on the dollar.
Well, right.
You know? And it's one of those things where, By offering these books, great. But to think that you're going to sell 10,000 copies of some issue, and the fact that there's 10,000 copies being printed just for one store, and never mind that there's certain stores that have store-only variants,
right?
You know, what they've done by doing this is they've desaturated a market. They've made comic books as a whole overall worth less because there's so many more of them out there.
Right.
And, you know, when you're looking at the average sales for a book in a month are, you know, between 40 and 80,000. Think that someone's going to sell 10,000 of one.
Yeah.
And I shared the monthly for January, the monthly sales and market share. Marvel is double DC in both market share and sales right now.
But I don't think that's because of variant covers.
No.
I don't think that is. The problem that I'm the variants, seeing like, is because 1990s was when the variant cover bonanza started.
Yeah, they did the gold foil.
And, well, yeah. It was all because of...
Sealed bags.
Image was doing like a crazy amount of stuff. And Marvel was, before they declared bankruptcy, was doing a crazy amount of stuff.
I have the problem was Green Lantern ones where Parallax is flocked.
Oh, the glow-in-the-dark one.
Yeah. No. Does it glow in the dark?
Yeah, it glows in the dark. Yeah. Yeah. See, that's scary.
Why would my book need to glow in the dark? I can't read it.
Well, it's so you can find it when you go when you're going to the bathroom in the middle of the night.
It should be in a board, in a bag, in a box. Oh, So, just complete tangent. You know, the wife likes the Big Bang Theory, right?
Yeah.
So the other day we were watching whatever this last week's was, and I typically, like, I'll come and go. It's one where I just come and go.
I've stopped watching it at this point.
They put a hot cup of beverage on a comic book as a coaster.
Okay.
Well, you know, like, how does that happen?
You know why that is on that show that they're doing that, right?
Yeah.
Well, is because every book that they use on that show are from dollar bins.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if anybody is really paying attention that knows comic books,
you mean like the fact that it's the 2005 Teen Titans book in every bin at the store?
Yeah. You even go worse. There's some 1990 Supermans in those bins too. And I'm like, wait a minute. There's a local shop here that's up, an hour away from us in Dayton called The Bookery that you can go down in their basement and buy those books for a dollar. And I'm like, those are all dollar books.
Yeah.
So no wonder why he doesn't have this successful comic book business, because he's just selling dollar comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
That show's anyway, just totally lost me.
So, sorry. We're just talking about books that are, anyway, so she in here, she says she worries a lot, and she worries a lot about store owners and the decisions they're making to buy more comics than they need or can sell.
I think what the point of it was is she worries a lot because she's a small business, and some of these comic book stores are not small businesses anymore. No. Even though they consider themselves small business, they are like killing the smaller comic book stores, because they're going along with the publishers and being like, yeah, send us 10,000 of this book. But the thing is like you said, Jeff didn't order Dark Knight 3. He ordered some from DC.
He ordered
from Diamond.
Yeah.
But he got some from his friend, because if you know that your friend's ordering this much, why would you order so much for your store when you can just go, hey, give me some of those for this much, or I'll trade you this, or,
So
I've got this variant cover that you probably could sell better than I can sell.
So we have, 6 good-sized comic book stores here?
Do you want me to go down the list? Or?
I mean, we've got Queen City, we've got Mavericks.
There's Queen City, there's Mavericks, there's Astonishing, there's Comic Book World, there's Up, Up, and Away.
Nostalgia. Now, but like, so when I look
Arcadian,
at... Arcadian. Oh, yeah. So.
But I mean...
But
if you go down the list of the sizes of those, like Arcadian is a smaller store. Nostalgia is a smaller store. Astonishing is a smaller store on the comic book side. The big stores here would be Queen City and Up, Up, and Away.
Right.
Comic Book World is probably there. Comics to Games is there.
Yeah.
They're the second tier to me, because it's like Queen City and Comic Book World have been here the longest.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys know what they're doing. I mean, Paul and Jeff.
Yeah.
But
she makes a really good point here, too. It's like, at this point, you want to minimize the back issues you have.
Yeah.
Because they're not worth anything.
Yeah. I mean, unless you're selling older back issues, which we know Queen City does.
I mean, most of them around here do.
Any of your books that you have that you bought from, say, 1986 till now are worth maybe a couple bucks.
Maybe.
Unless it's the first appearance of Deadpool.
Yeah.
Or the first appearance of this character, or the first appearance. Your first appearance books, they're worth something.
The Black Spidey issue for 9/11. That one's worth something.
Yeah.
You know.
There's books within there. Sorry. Let's just call them what they are. They're anomalies within the straight line.
Yeah.
I mean, the straight line is, I'm sorry, and I'm sorry for the people out there who think that they have a ton of value in their comic books. They are worth maybe a couple bucks a piece.
If you're talking about books that are worth a lot of money, they're books that are worth that the sticker price, quote unquote, is 25 cents.
Less than that.
Well, I'm saying if you're speculative and you find a box of comics from the 90s,
you better no.
Unless it's like like you said, the introduction to Deadpool, the introduction to Cable.
What I advise people that I've talked to that ask me, because they know I'm a comic book collector, if they say, "Hey, I got comic books," I'll be like, "Hey, what year is they from?" 1980s, 1990s. I'll be like, "Go through your comic books. Go on Google and type in the title and the number.
Mm-hmm.
And if it comes up with something more than just a comic book, then come to me and show me it."
Yeah.
Because there's also the other part. Make sure you take care of your comic books.
Yeah.
bag your comic books. Well, like, change the bags every 5 to 10 years.
Like a Modern Family, there was in one of the seasons, it was when Cam and Mitch were trying to get married and they didn't have enough money.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I have a Spider-Man comic. It's the first appearance of Doc Ock. Yeah. Right? All right. Great. And he's like, it's worth $5,000. So at least that's what the guy at the store told him. Well, he goes and he gets it. It's in a bag. Not backed. Yeah. It's in a bag. It's not zipped. You know, and he's waving it around right, all over the place. So, you know, it's like, no, that thing is not worth $5,000.
Well, yeah, it's just one of those things where even if I, as a retailer, were to say to you, those books are worth about $5,000, until you bring it in and show it to me, I can't tell you that your book is worth $5,000. And if it is worth $5,000, I'm probably going to offer you $1,500 because I'm going to sell it for $5,000.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where if you're going to collect something, anything, Lego, Star Wars, toys, anything, educate yourself. Educate yourself. If you're going to open a comic book store, educate yourself.
And that's why I haven't pulled the trigger on.
Well, right. You know, and it's one of those things where she's been doing this since the 90s. Yeah. She's been doing it for 20 years. And I'm like, kudos to her.
I want to go visit her store now.
Well, right. Yeah. If I'm ever in Texas, you know, she'll be on the list. The
next time I'm in Houston.
Yeah. And I'll go in there and high five her and I'll buy stuff from her because I'm like, you know what?
I mean,
support the small businesses.
You're like me. When we go to new places, we make it a point to check out local stores.
And I've gone in the ones where I'm like, how do you stay open?
I went to that one in Knoxville. I remember I told you, and like, I couldn't find their new release. I don't remember the name of it.
Okay.
It was like this weird, like, hobbity wooden door that you went into.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I don't know that one.
It was like, it's like right on the other side of like the main little square.
Huh. Okay.
And, you know, first off, they were super rude. And then,
yeah, you can't be that way either.
Second off, they had more like board games and stuff like that than anything else. And that's where, like, you know, like you had mentioned Astonishing and Nostalgia and like Rockin' Rooster. Like, our stores around.
Sorry, I forgot about Rockin' Rooster.
Our stores around here where, yeah, they do comics and even comics to games at this point. They cater more to the games.
You have to do the games because the games bring in people.
Right.
Because there's as many gamers out there as there are comic book readers. More. Probably, yeah.
Like, honestly,
I mean, you know, the thing that the comic book industry always talks about is trying to bring in female readers and that.
But they have.
The thing
like,
is.
That's the thing. They have.
Look at your gamers, because there's been female gamers a lot longer than there have been female comic book readers.
So.
I know a few.
I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if they want to grow readership, they need to make the community more accessible.
Right.
Because right now it's not.
The variant covers are just a small part of that.
Yeah.
It's the whole idea of, you know, continuously rebirthing your characters. Yeah, that's a dig at you, DC. It's a continuous thing of, you know, do we need to reset these characters? Do we need to? And it's like, you know, Marvel did Secret Wars, but that's not really a reset.
Every time Marvel starts a new volume, they go with number ones.
Right. But the thing about it is
they've done that for 30 years.
You can do a separate volume and have a new number one because it's a new volume.
Yeah.
But the thing about it is Marvel doesn't say none of this happened before.
No, it's all included.
Yeah, it's all there. It's just, hey, this is a new year. I mean, literally, if I was running a comic book company that had been around for 75 years, I was thinking, how can I re-energize this? My books every year would have year 2016.
Whatever, yeah.
And number 1 through 12. A maxi series.
Yep.
You literally do your comic books as maxi series, the ones that are your continuous books like Spider-Man.
And we've talked about this before, where like, does continuity really matter anymore?
Continuity matters.
Having continuity, like, and respecting the past and making sure those stories count.
Right.
Yes, it matters. At the same time, does it matter to have one continuous continuity slaved book?
No. No. Because the problem with that is the collectors who actually collect comic books feel that they have to be obligated to buy everything.
Right.
And we're guilty of it. I mean, I buy Green Lantern and I don't even read the damn thing anymore.
You're looking at a stack of 18 months worth of Green Lantern, Red Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, and New Guardians. And, you know, honestly, like...
Will you ever read them? Probably not.
You know, no.
Not.
Because it got stupid.
Right.
But at the same time, I have every Green Lantern book since 1986.
But if they did it where they did year 2016, 1 through 12... Do you feel like you would have to buy it?
No. But I also feel like I would read it.
Well, right. And it's the thing where you would go in and you would pick up the first issue, like I do, like we talked about last week with Hanna-Barbera Land.
Yeah.
You know, we'll just call it Hanna-Barbera Land for right now. I will buy the first issues.
Yeah.
I will try it because I like to try new things. And I want to see what people are trying to do.
Right.
I want to see how creative you are to me. Mm-hmm. I may not buy it all. But it's one of those things where...
Like, you know, I like to try new books. I especially like when people recommend books. Mm-hmm. That's how I ended up reading Archie.
Yeah.
And the Jughead book, which I really like, which is, it's completely different than the Archie book. You know, it's how I end up reading things like Faster Than Light, you know, Sex Criminals.
Right.
Not really a book that's necessarily in my wheelhouse.
Right.
But I tried it and I really enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's and hilarious. It's one of those things really where,
you know, it's choose, also the, you're right. Yeah. So. Yeah. And that's one that I haven't read that you keep telling me to.
Like,
I recommended that to you.
You recommended that. And it was like, at the point you were recommending it, I was so far behind.
Yeah.
That's like, I'm never going to be able to catch up. And then Comixology did a huge sale where I bought 9 trades.
Right.
At once. And I got caught up really quickly.
And then you were like, thank you.
Well, no. And then I was like, I'm giving you the finger.
Flipping me off and thanking me at the same time.
Because it's like, crap, now I have this other, like, and I went, and same thing with The Walking Dead. I got caught up and it's like, I could wait, you know, 6 months. To but read do you the want trades. To?
No.
But no, I like the story, and so I went to weekly. We talked about digital a little bit last week.
Right.
If these stores want to like continue to grow, there's a couple things that they can do digitally. One, Comixology offers gift cards. Start buying gift cards for people to sell in your store for people to get stuff on Comixology. Two, if you want to sell your books online or get credit for books that people of your customers that buy them online.
Right.
Set up a Comixology storefront attached to your store website. You get, I think it's like 20% of the purchase.
Right, that's a you good know, percentage.
Like, it's a really good, like, it's a really good thing. And it's
with the
just,
price of what books are now, that is a good percentage of money.
So, and that's...
And every little bit helps.
And that's for a physical copy you didn't have to buy.
Right. But, I mean, that's seriously where every little bit helps. And, I mean, that's the whole thing is, you know, and we're going to cut this
down.
We're wrapping it up. You support your comic book stores.
You support your comic
book stores. You take care of your comic book stores because that's your entertainment. That's your entertainment. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you go to the movies and all that stuff. That stuff's still going to be around. But in my 20-plus years of collecting comics, I have seen more stores shut down than I've seen open.
And I've always said, like, if I had to pick two things between... If I had to pick one between toys or comics... You know, for a long time, I said I'd give up comics and I'd just get the toys. Well, you know, I mean, I've... been dealt with that decision here.
Right.
What did I give up?
Yeah.
The toys. You know, I mean,
it's one of those things where, and I mean, a lot of that ties together, but it's one of those things where, and it goes back to what everybody says, support the small businesses.
Yep.
Guess what? Comic book stores are the small business. Mm-hmm. They are one of the major small businesses in this country. There are not thousands of these places.
Not anymore.
And you know, they're not supported by the publishers.
No.
Because the publishers are just there to make money at this point. They don't care. They don't care about.
Well, I read Walmart's going to start carrying trades. Yeah. And that's.
They're going to start carrying single issues
too. Single issues too. Sorry, you're right. I did read that. And that's like the worst thing that can happen to comics. I mean, look what happened to Borders.
Yeah.
And that part of that is because of the deals they did with comics.
Yeah.
So, and that, I mean, that hurt the industry as a whole. This, like, and this isn't like an indictment on Walmart. It's more of the fact that there's this giant box
store. It's more of an indictment on the companies that are going to put their books into Walmart. You know, I don't know if that's through Diamond or not, but it's like one of those things where...
I mean, at this point, Diamond is a monopoly.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah, they've got it. They killed Advance Comics back in the 90s. And
so you have one set price. There's very limited competition and all that. Okay, so we covered a lot of stuff, a lot of heavy stuff, a lot of fun stuff. We want to know what you guys think about claiming, you know, credit for things that were a team effort.
Right.
You know, like, leave us a post.
Not even ownership, just credit.
Yeah, just credit.
I mean, because I think we all claim a little bit of ownership to these characters at this point, you know.
So.
And that's a different argument. But claiming creatorship and, you know, giving credit where credit's due, I would like to know what people think.
Yeah. What's your favorite? What was your favorite preview from the Super Bowl? Let us know about that.
I don't know what mine was. I'll have to go watch them again.
You know, if I had to pick one just right now, I would go with Turtles.
Okay.
So, but I did really like Civil War.
Yeah,
really liked Civil War. So I want that. It
might have been the Hulk versus Ant-Man for me.
Well, yeah, I mean, that wasn't really a trailer. Well, but it was a great commercial.
It's a trailer, but it's not it's an indirect trailer is what that's called.
I want that Apple Watch that turns into the Repulsor Gauntlet. Tony had.
Yeah, Tony Stark's new gadget.
But no, and then, you know, just kind of like, what's your guys' idea of true canon? I mean, obviously the movies and the comics are completely different things. But like,
how do you feel about that?
That would be great. Yeah. Shoot us an email at theinfamouspodcast.com. You know, and as always, guys, to close out the show, help us out by subscribing. Definitely subscribe on iTunes. You know, even if you don't have an iPhone, download iTunes on your computer, which you probably have it, and go ahead and subscribe. That helps us. We got a bunch of really good reviews this week from people.
Awesome.
So let's keep that going. Yeah. Give us some 5-star reviews and write something. Don't just go and do the stars. I mean, you can just do the stars. That's fine. But we really appreciate when
we
you
like
write
to
it.
Hear from our listenership.
Yeah. But yeah, and as always, you can find us at infamouspodcast.com, Infamous Podcast on Twitter and Facebook. And Johnny has some exciting news about his social media.
Oh, that I changed my Instagram to Johnny Podor?
Finally.
It's one whole word.
Yeah, just like Twitter.
See, my Twitter looks different, though, so
I don't know. Your Twitter handle is at Johnny Podor.
At Johnny Podor.
Yeah, so.
So I'm at Johnny Podorf everywhere right now. Yeah,
and I'm at Brian Tudor everywhere right now. So, and we're at Infamous Podcast everywhere. But anyway, guys, have a great weekend. Until the next episode comes out, we'll do a review of Deadpool and post it next Tuesday. It will be spoiler heavy, so keep that in mind.
Yep.
And yeah, have an awesome week.
Have a good one.
Later.